Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. It's Thursday, so this is an archive show, first published as a newspaper column and podcast episode sometime in the last 10 years. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy our show. This story was first published on March 27th of 2011 under the headline, Oregon Had the First Female Governor in U.S. History, for one weekend in 1909. Here we go. Editor's note, when this story was first published back in 2011, we got Governor Shelton's name wrong, referring to her as Carolyn B. Shelton. Her real name was Carrie B. Shelton. Special thanks go to historian Dr. Kimberly Jensen of Western Oregon University for catching this error. Ask most Oregonians who the first woman governor in Oregon history was, and they'll have an answer right away. A wrong answer. Conventional wisdom holds that Barbara Roberts was the first female Oregon governor. In fact, that is almost true, but almost doesn't work as an answer to a true or false question. The truth is, Barbara Roberts was the first elected female Oregon governor. The first woman to serve as governor of Oregon was Carrie B. Shelton, who essentially covered a weekend shift for her boss in early 1909. In fact, Carrie Shelton was not only the first woman governor in Oregon history, but probably all of American history as well. For that one historic weekend, Oregon was the first and only state in the nation with a female governor. This was especially ironic because it wasn't until 1912, 3 years later, that women officially won the right to vote in Oregon. Here's the story. In 1909, outgoing Governor George Chamberlain had just been elected to the U.S. Senate. The freshman crop of senators would be sworn in and seated on Monday, March 1st, the same day his successor, Frank W. Benson, would be sworn in as governor of Oregon. The problem was, if Chamberlain stayed through the end of his term and then traveled to D.C., every other member of that freshman class would have seniority over him because he'd be sworn in late. So Chamberlain resigned as governor and left for Washington 2 days early on Saturday, February 27th. Ordinarily, this would have been neatly arranged with his successor, Frank W. Benson. Benson would come in early as acting governor, and come Monday morning, he'd be sworn in for reals. But Benson was in a sick bed and too sick to get up and come in and do it, so Chamberlain left his trusty chief of staff, Carrie B. Shelton, in charge as acting governor, and climbed aboard an eastbound train. By Monday morning, Benson was feeling better, and at 10 a.m. he was sworn in, and Shelton's one-weekend gubernatorial reign was at an end. As far as I've been able to learn, nothing much happened during her 49 hours in office, but if anything had, she would have been the state's chief executive in charge of dealing with it. To the modern ear, it sounds like a very unremarkable thing for a governor of a state or the CEO of a company to have a woman as a secretary. But in the 1910s, this was absolutely not the case with private secretaries to high-level executives. In fact, it may be that Shelton was the first female private secretary to a state governor, as well as governor. Those jobs had always gone to men. But Carrie Shelton was hardly an unremarkable woman. She started out working for Chamberlain as a stenographer, back when he was just an up-and-coming young attorney. He quickly recognized her aptitude and intelligence and started giving her more and more demanding assignments. Soon she was drafting legal documents for him and doing research, basically functioning as a paralegal. Back before there were paralegals, of course. Naturally, when he was elected governor, Chamberlain tapped his most trusted underling and most competent underling to serve as his private secretary, disregarding the prejudices of his day. And that's how that happened. As a side note, 17 years after this incident, Chamberlain and Shelton got married. At the risk of stating something really obvious, at the time of this writing, this is the only case of two ex-governors marrying each other in U.S. history. Or, shoot, the history of the universe, probably. Key sources in this story included works by James Andrew Long and Time Magazine, as well as, of course, Dr. Kimberly Jensen of Western Oregon University. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. What you've been listening to is one of more than 550 stories originally created and published as newspaper columns in first-run syndication between 2008 and today. You can read them all at offbeatoregon.com. Offbeat Oregon is a division of Pulplit Productions, pulp-lit.com, a boutique publishing house owned and operated by yours truly, specializing in audiobook and multimedia editions of the work of the classic pre-war pulp writers. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license type CC by SA 4.0, which basically means you can do anything with the content you like so long as you A, give me credit for it, and B, whatever you make is also released under a Creative Commons license. But if you need a waiver to either A or B, hit me up, fj@offbeatoregon.com. I've never said no yet to a request for a waiver of one of those conditions. They're generally there just to prevent me from accidentally authorizing the reuse of something I don't actually control the rights to. A good example might be a photograph used by special permission of the rights holder. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Questions, critiques, ideas for a future episode? Email me at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every single weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.